Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Beitza is daf Beis, meaning the beginning. We start at the beginning of the Masechta this morning. Mazel tov for the completion of Masechta Sukkah. And we begin now a Masechta dedicated to the topic of Yantav. This Masechta, also five prakim, is going to be dedicated to the discussion about the laws of Yantav. Yantav is slightly different than Shabbos. There's a general list from Halacha on Yantav like there is on Shabbos, but with some variation. That variation will be discussed over the course of these five prakim, and that is going to be the topic of our discussion. First off, thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf will be learned with Zecher Nishmas Slovis Lupin Zaltzman. And we begin. First of all, just a brief word in terms of why we're learning Beitza next, meaning why. Obviously, no one's here is in charge of the Daf Yomi schedule. In other words, the Daf is just simply whatever poster we hang up on the board, that's the Masechta they're going to do next. So, but why is Beitza coming up next? So I'm going to give away a secret. It's not such a secret, but it's really one of the best kept mysteries in the world in terms of the Seder of the Masechtos. So, and that is the following. Basically, whichever Masechta has larger prakim, larger number of prakim, it's not based on daf, but larger number of prakim is placed first. And then whatever Masechta has just slightly less prakim goes next, and so forth and so on. So in other words, then you look in every Seder, and it works in every single Seder, meaning this magical formula works throughout the entire Shas. Let's take a look at Moed. Right now we're in the middle of Seder Moed. So there was the first Masechta we saw in Moed, so that's Shabbos. Shabbos has 24 prakim. What's the next one we saw in Moed? Erevin. Erevin's got 10 prakim. What's the next one we saw in Moed? Shkalim. Shkalim's got 8 prakim. And the next, I'm sorry, Pesachim. Pesachim's got 10 prakim. Then Shkalim. Shkalim's got 8 prakim. Then Sukkah. Sukkah's got 5. Then Beitza. Beitza's got 5. And okay, in other words, that's basically, next one's going to be Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah's got 4, etc., etc. So in other words, we start with the larger prakim Masechtas, and then we move our way down. And this is true for every single Seder. You may point to Seder Nezikin, and you'll think that you'll get me on that one. Seder Nezikin starts with Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basra, each one of them having 10 prakim. And then it's Sanhedrin, and Sanhedrin has 11 prakim. Right, so that's a challenge. It's not, because Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra was originally one Masechta, which was 30 prakim long, and then it was divided at some point later on into 3 Masechtas of 10 prakim. But it really, the Bavas are really just one Masechta. So it really is a 30 perek Masechta, which then got divided into tens. Anyway, that's it. That's the magic, the mystery of which Masechta follows which. And if you think about it, it makes sense because, as C.S. said, chronologically, we're still only going out of order, meaning if we want to follow the chronology of the year, we should be doing first Rosh Hashanah, then Yuma, then Sukkah. Okay, in other words, that should be the order. That's not the order. The order is we first did Sukkah, now we're doing Beitza, then we're going to be doing Rosh Hashanah. So it's not a function of chronology. It's a function of number of prakim. Okay, that's the great mystery behind what Masechta follows which. Okay, I gave it away right here. I got it. By the way, where did I get the secret from? So Rabbi Kornfeld, one of my rebbeim from Eretz Yisrael. He told me the great secret. By the way, the Rambam, you should know, just in general, you should know that the Rambam, in addition to what I just told you, also gives other explanations of why Masechtas follow each other. Okay, but anyway, that's what I told you is just the basics. Okay, I strongly encourage. I know in the beginning of the Art School of Mars, he has a lengthy introduction to the topic of Muksa. Muksa is going to be one of our biggest topics that we're going to be covering over the course of the Masechta. In fact, today, just today alone, all we're going to talk about is the Yisr of Muksa. So I encourage you to read the introduction. I did not read the introduction. Okay. So just, but in full disclosure, I'm sure at one point in time I did. But read the introduction, because Muksa is a complex issue. In other words, there are categories, there are subcategories. There are many different permutations within the world of Muksa. So you see enough of the Gemaras, and so therefore you become familiar. We're all going to familiarize ourselves better with the concept of Muksa, but Muksa is a very large concept. And if you understand the categories and the subcategories, so it's easier to have just a smooth-going conversation, discussion about the topic of Muksa. So I strongly encourage that you read it so that you get to see all the nuances and distinctions and categories of the world of Muksa. Okay. We'll start the first Mishnah. We're on Beitza, Daf Beitza Amud Aleph, and we begin from the very beginning. Beitza Shanol Be Yontav, I have an egg laid on Yontav. Beishamai Omrim Tochal, Beisol Omrim Lo Sochal. So we have a machlok between Beishamai and Beisol. Beishamai says that you can eat the egg, and Beisol says that you cannot eat the egg. Now, before giving any word of explanation of why and why not, so you'll note the first unusual thing about the Mishnah, that is that Beis Shammai is Mekel. We have a lenient viewpoint of Beis Shammai. So you know Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel well enough to know that that's usually not how it works. Beis Shammai usually is the more machmir, he's usually the more stringent position. Beis Hillel is usually the more lenient position, and we usually follow, almost always follow the position of Beis Hillel, and now the Beis Shammai. So the first thing you'll notice in our Mishnah is that we have an egg laid on Yontif. The issue is I'm not even going to broach that subject yet, because that'll be the topic of today's daf and tomorrow's daf, and I believe also we can go even one day more. But in other words, that's going to be the big topic of discussion: why this egg is prohibited. But the first thing that you have to observe is that Beis Shammai is Mekel and Beis Hillel is Machmer. And then, as Rashi points out, as long as we're on the topic, so give me all the other examples, and there are not that many others. In fact, there are only going to be two others. Give me all the other examples where we're going to find Beis Shammai to be Mekel, he's going to be lenient, and Beis Hillel is going to be Machmir. Beis Shammai Omrim Tochal, Beis Hillel Omrim Lo Sochal. Fine, I'm sorry, I just reread the first example in our Mishnah where the egg is laid on Yontav. So Beis Shammai says that you're allowed to eat the egg, and Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to eat the egg. Beis Shammai Omrim Seor B'Kezayis V'Chametz B'Kakos Seves. Okay, how big? How big is Shear? For chametz. Okay, today's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so this should be primary in our mind. So that we know in 2 weeks from now we're going to be sitting down, we're going to be enjoying the Seder. We also know that the Seder represents the beginning of Pesach, meaning it will be that for those 7 days, and here in Galus 8 days, where we're going to be prohibited from eating chametz. Prohibited from eating chametz, prohibited from owning chametz. So how much? In other words, we know with every Isser in the Torah, with every prohibition in the Torah, so there's a requisite amount, there's a shear. What's the shear for chametz? So the Mishnah says that's subject to a machlok between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says that when it comes to Seor, the shear is a kezayis. When it comes to chametz, the shear is a kosevis. First of all, what is what? Seor is a leavening agent, right? We think leavening agent, we think yeast, okay? Because we are, you know, because that's basically what our catalyst of fermentation is. Usually we think in terms of yeast. Don't think in terms of yeast. When you think about when you think about leavening agents in the good old days, so sourdough. Sourdough was basically a piece of dough that was left out and has a little bit of fungus growing on it and bacteria growing on it, and it's great. Not to eat, although they did, but not to eat. But basically what you did is you took the sourdough, you threw it back into another piece of dough, and that caused fermentation. So the Torah says, if you were listening to Parsha Sachodesh, just over Shabbos, the Torah says that on Pesach, so we're not allowed to have Seor, we're not allowed to have Chametz. The Torah prohibits us from having both on Pesach and eating both on Pesach. What Beis Shammai is going to do is he's going to say, fine, but the shear is going to be different for the two of them. The shear for Seor is a shear of a kezias, okay, the volume of an olive. The shear of chametz is going to be a larger shear. It's going to be that of a kosevis. We talked about kosevis back in Yuma in the 8th parak. A kosevis is the size of a date, which is larger than an olive. So he is mekel. He's lenient. Meaning a larger shear means that you have to have more chametz in order to violate the Torah prohibition. So you see that here's another example where Beis Shammai is lenient. Beis Hillel Omrim Zeh v'zeh b'kezayis. Beis Hillel says no, that both Seor and chametz are subject to the shear of a kezayis. So here's a second example where Beis Shammai is mekel, Beis Hillel is machmer. A third example, Shochet chayiv of b'yomtov. Let's say yishecht on yomtov. Okay, a little bit of background, just to understand this third. We're going to discuss this more in detail later in the Masechta, a couple days from now, but just to give a brief introduction. So when you shecht either a wild animal, and the Torah categorizes animals basically into two categories. One is what's called the chaya, and the other one's called the behema. Chaya, I simply say it's a wild animal. Okay, it doesn't have to be wild. I mean a deer and a gazelle. All right, I'm not sure if they were wild, but in other words, they don't grow on farms, they're not domesticated, you don't herd them. In other words, they're out in the wild. So that's what the Torah describes as being a chaya. as opposed to behema. Behemas are more domesticated animals. Okay, they're both. Both varieties have kosher species within them, meaning there's kosher chaya and there's kosher behema. But what the difference is in the Torah is that, first of all, let's just talk about the primary difference, is that carbon. Meaning we only bring carbon from behema, we don't bring carbon from chaya. Fine. The Torah only allows the bringing of cows and sheep and goat as carbonos and bull, right? But gazelle and all those other those wild, quote unquote wild animals, so they're not brought as a carbon. But on top of that, there's another basic distinction, another fundamental distinction, in that when I shech the behema, so there's no mitzvah in the Torah to cover the blood. In other words, there's a mitzvah in the Torah called kisui adam, the covering of the blood. When I shech the behema, I don't have to cover the blood. When I shech the chaya, so there's a mitzvah to cover the blood. There is one more basic distinction between the two, and that's the chaylev, the forbidden fats. The forbidden fats, meaning those are not the muscular fats, that's the delicious part, and perhaps not good for you, but don't get medical advice from me. But in other words, but the forbidden fats are basically the hard fats that are surrounding the intestines of the animal. The Gemara in Chulin gives actually anatomical reference points in terms of where they are in the animal. But the chaylev, the forbidden fats of the animal, so those are prohibited when they come from a behema. But a chaya, those fats are not forbidden. Okay, so another basic distinction between chaya and behema. So now the Mishnah describes a scenario where I'm shechting either a chaya, a wild animal, or an oaf on yantiv. So we're going to learn, we're going to see over the course of this Masechta, you can shecht an animal on yantiv. Now, we in practice don't, but that's for a different time and for a different discussion. But theoretically, conceptually, we're allowed to shecht an animal on yantiv. Yantiv, you're allowed to do food preparation. And part of that food preparation is shechting of an animal. So now, here's the dilemma that our Mishnah is dealing with. I shecht an animal on yantiv, a chay or an oaf, either a wild animal or a bird. There's a mitzvah in the Torah of kisui hadam. So what's the quote-unquote the problem? The problem is, what if I don't have dirt? So what am I going to do? And am I going to stick a shovel in the ground and basically scoop up dirt to put on top of the blood? So on one hand, I accomplished the mitzvah. On the other hand, the scooping up of the dirt, that's a malacha. That's not allowed on yantiv. That's not food preparation. That's just to accomplish the mitzvah of kisui adam. The animal's still going to be kosher even if I don't do the mitzvah of kisui adam. So basically now it's a... It's a muksa issue, could even be more than a muksa issue. It's I'm digging into the ground issue. So what if I shech the chayin off anyanta, Beis Shammai armim, yachbar bedeka v'yachasa? So Beis Shammai says, you dig in the ground and you cover. Now how can Beis Shammai allow you to do that? So stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that later in the parak. I'm just, right now, just giving the ABCs, just the basics, in terms of what the issues are. So Beis Shammai allows you to take the shovel and to pick up dirt in order to put on top of the blood in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Kisur Adam. Beis Hillel Omrim lo yishchot ela im kein hayelo efer muchan mi ba'o yom. And Beis Hillel says, no, unless you have dirt already prepared before Yontif. Meaning you take dirt before Yontif, you hold it up and you say, you don't have to hold it up. I'm being dramatic. But basically, you point it and you say, this dirt is going to be for my mitzvah kisui adam. So you have the dirt earmarked, set aside before Yontif, then and only then, Beis Hillel says, can you shecht a chaya and an oaf on Yontif. But if you don't have it prepared before Yontif, so therefore it's going to be milk. So therefore I can't use it. Therefore, I can't shecht the animal on yantiv. The wild animal and the bird cannot be shecht on yantiv because I don't have efer muchan, because I don't have prepared dirt. Lo yishchot ela im kein ayu lo efer muchan mi bod yom. Umodim, they both will agree, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, shim shacha, that if you shech, sheyachbor bedeka v'yachaser. So then you can cover with the dirt. Meaning, b'diavad, if you did so, you could cover with the dirt. The Gemara is going to comment on this. The Gemara says, what do you mean? They both agree. Hasn't Beis Hillel just told us that you can't do that? So what's Beis Hillel saying now that b'diavad, it's okay? What's the difference between l'chatchila versus b'diavad? And then the Mishnah makes a cryptic statement, efer kira muchanhu. The ashes found in your oven, meaning after you cooked in your oven, so there are going to be ashes on the bottom. Remember, their ovens were heated by coal. So after the coal has been burnt, so basically it's been reduced to ash on the ground, it's muchan, it's prepared, it's considered prepared, and therefore you could use the ashes to cover the dirt. Again, this end of the Mishnah over here is choppy, it's not clear. When we get to the Gemara later on, we'll explain it much better. The Gemara will attack these last lines of the Mishnah, but not today, much later on. Okay. These are three examples in the Mishnah. and perhaps the only three. Well, Rashi points out, it's not that just Beis Shammai is Mekel and Beis Hillel are Machmir, which is the common denominator. That's a common thread between these three cases, but also specific to Yontif. Meaning, so basically our common denominator in these three cases in the Mishnah is that A, Beis Shammai is Mekel, and B, these are halachas that pertain to Yontif. So the first halacha that if an egg is laid on Yontif, so according to Beis Shammai, you can eat the egg. Beis Hillel is strict. If you have... chametz on Pesach, so Beis Shammai says, in order to violate the Torah, you need a kosevis, the volume of a date. And once again, Beis Hillel is more machmir, is more stringent. No, not the volume of a date, but the volume of an olive, which is smaller. And finally, the third example in the Mishnah is covering the blood on Yantiv. In other words, you shecht an animal on Yantiv, and then you want to cover the blood. So Beis Shammai basically says, you have the shovel, the dirt's in the shovel, go ahead, cover it. And Beis Hillel says, no, you cannot. So these are three examples as it pertains to Yantav, where Beis Shammai is Mekel and Beis Hillel is Machmer. And it's unusual because, Rashi points out in the Mishnah, it's unusual because, generally speaking, Beis Shammai is the Machmer. So they do a role reversal on this. Okay. The rest of today's daf is dedicated to one singular topic. And not only the rest of today's daf, but tomorrow's daf as well. And that is an explanation. Meaning the Mishnah says that if an egg is laid on Yantiv, so Beis Shammai says that you're allowed to eat the egg, and Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to eat the egg. Okay. Like we always know, the assumption is that the halacha is going to follow like Beis Hillel. And so the halacha is like Beis Hillel, so that means then that you're not allowed to eat the egg. And so pray tell why. Why not? Why can I not eat the egg that's laid on Yantiv? That's going to be our discussion, and that will be for the remainder of today's daf, tomorrow's daf as well, an attempted explanation of why it is that you're not allowed to eat the egg. In fact, today, there's going to be almost like an introduction to the topic of discussion. I mean, the Gemara is going to spend the rest of today's daf, starting from the Gemara. The rest of this Amud through to the middle of the next Amud, giving almost like a preamble, almost like an introduction to why it would be that you're not allowed to eat the egg. The Gemara is going to end up essentially rejecting the preamble, the introduction, and then the Gemara is going to go into 1, 2, 3, 4, tomorrow I'll do a summary statement. But I think five different explanations of why it is that you're not allowed to eat the egg. All, by the way, five explanations all within the topic of muksa. Okay. First of all, let's just say it out in terms of now that we're focusing on the first case of the Mishnah, and now we're going to be talking about the topic of muksa. So let's just say it out. Just a basic introduction. Again, I strongly encourage that you, if you have an art school, to read the introduction to muksa. He's very thorough. So just first of all, when we talk about muksa, what are we talking about? Basically, the idea behind muksa, the overarching idea behind muksa, is the following. When you go into Shabbos, when you go into Yontif, so I need everything prepared. Meaning we're preparing our food, we're preparing what we're going to wear. In other words, basically there has to be a sense of, I'm going to use this over the course of Shabbos and over the course of Yontif. Okay? And as long as I have these items earmarked and prepared, so then they're called muchan. They're called basically prepared. Meaning it's a simple way to describe it. The opposite of muhchan, if there is such a thing, but the opposite of muhchan would be muksa. Muksa means that much as muhchan means it's prepared for Shabbos or for Yontif, meaning my mind is on it, I'm thinking about it, the opposite of that would be muksa. Muksa means that basically mikatsa midas, it's out of my mind. I don't have thoughts about it, right? I didn't think I was going to need this or use this over the course of Shabbos or on Yontif. Okay. Now, that's a general... just definition of the words muhchan versus muksa. But again, though, as we're going to see over the course of today's discussion, tomorrow's discussion, we're going to speak about it categorically. Okay, and we'll try over the course of these next days to give ourselves a basis of understanding, some basic categoric understandings of what we're talking about. So first of all, let's see if we could do this. Let's understand our Mishnah, or at least make an attempt to understand our Mishnah. An egg that's laid on Yontif, you're not allowed to eat the egg. Why not? B'maya skinan. So first of all, the Gemara is going to assume that chickens fall into either one of two categories. Either the chicken is intended to be eaten, meaning you have a chicken farm for one of two reasons. Either the chickens are there to be shechted and to be eaten, or the chickens are there to lay eggs. Okay? spent 3 good years of my life on a chicken farm. Okay, they were very good years of my life. That's where the yeshiva was located in Israel. So on a chicken farm. So the smelled wonderful. So those chickens, obviously, in other words, the farmers have absolutely no intent on shechting those chickens. Meaning those chickens, day in, day out, obviously going into shops, but going to every day of the year, those chickens are meant to be kept alive because those chickens are producing eggs. So those are what's called tarnagolas, ha'omedes, legadol beitzim. That categorically are chickens that are intended to deliver eggs, to lay eggs. And then, of course, they're chickens which are meant to be eaten. So, when our Mishnah says that the egg which is laid on Yontav is forbidden, so first of all, what category of chicken are we talking about? If we're talking about where we're intending to eat the chicken, my tama de Beis Hillel. So then what I cannot understand is the position of Beis Hillel. Because Beis Hillel says that when the egg is laid on Yontav, you can't eat the egg. Really, why not? Uchla de Ephras hu. I don't understand. The egg is part of the chicken. Meaning, again, we're not talking about Shabbos, we're talking about Yontav. Yontav, you're allowed to do food preparation, which means that we're allowed to on Yontav shech the chicken. So I don't understand. I can shech the chicken and I can eat the meat of the chicken. I can't eat the egg? That doesn't make any sense. Well, I must eat the chicken, I can eat the egg inside of it as well. And just because the egg emerged outside the body of the chicken on Yontav, so now the egg is muksa? Or for whatever reason, in other words, I'm trying to withhold using the word muksa, even though that really is the issue. But in other words, but I don't understand. The chicken was inside the egg, I'm allowed to eat the chicken. In fact, not only am I allowed to eat the chicken, my intent going into Yontav is I'm going to eat the chicken. So the egg, just because now it emerges outside the body of the chicken, now becomes muksa? That doesn't make any sense. So Ella, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's for the time being reject that out of hand. The chicken in question cannot be a chicken which was meant to be eaten. Okay, so the chicken now, we're going to say, is declaratively categorized as a chicken which is meant to lay eggs. Okay, so now, good. Meaning, when I say good, I mean that the chicken now is muksa. Meaning going into Shabbos, going into Yontav, let's say Yontav, because that's obviously our topic of discussion, I had no intent of shechting the chicken. Good, so this is an excellent illustration of the basic concept of muksa, where because I want this chicken to lay eggs, so that means going into Yontif, I had no intent on eating this chicken. So this is mikatse midas. The chicken's been, so to say, hands off. Right? In other words, I cannot shech this chicken on Yontif. So now the egg that emerges is going to be prohibited. Now I kind of understand Beis Hillel, meaning the chicken is muksa. Well, so is the egg that comes from that emerges from the chicken. So now, if we're talking about a chicken who was set aside as an egg-laying chicken, so now I'm going to reverse the question. Now what's the explanation behind Beis Hillel? But what's the explanation behind Beis Shammai? Mai ta'amai de Beis Shammai. Muksa hi. So the Gemara says this is a perfect example of muksa. Umay kusha. The Gemara says, okay, but I'm not bothered by that. Well, maybe Beis Shammai doesn't hold of muksa. Okay, you're going to hear this again and again throughout our Masechta. So get used to it now. Where the Gemara is going to basically say very declaratively and very straightforwardly, well, some people hold of muksa and some people don't hold of muksa. Now at face value, when I say it and when the Gemara says it, it sounds like, well, muksa is subject to a debate. Whether we hold the muksa or we don't hold the muksa. So I'm telling you right now, and you'll see this time and again, that even though the Gemara says that very declaratively and very simply, that doesn't mean that the lines are drawn between a camp of Tanaim who hold the muksa and a camp of Tanaim who don't hold the muksa. It's not that simple. It simply means, however, that within certain categories of muksa, so some Tanaim tend to be more lenient and some Tanaim tend to be more strict. That's what the Gemara essentially means. It's not speaking in a simple, categoric, here. He doesn't hold the muksa, meaning he just simply dropped, he just simply doesn't hold of it at all, and he does. It doesn't work that way. So the Gemara now is saying that Dilma, perhaps, Beit Shammai leis lo muksa. Beit Shammai does not hold of muksa in every permutation. And so therefore, the egg which is laid on Yontif, for Beit Shammai, we're going to be more lenient. Now, the Gemara does this often, and here's a good example where the Gemara basically telegraphs its punch. Meaning the Gemara is telling you, here's what I thought going into this question. Look, even those who are lenient in the world of Muksa, but are going to be stringent in the world of Nolad. Okay, so here we go now, our first categorization of the day. Meaning there's something called Muksa, there's something called Nolad. Okay, Nolad is a function also of Muksa, but it's just simply, it deserves its own category. So first of all, what's Muksa? Muksa, again, I'm discussing it in the context of this Gemara. I'm not giving broad definitions. We're speaking now just in the context of this Gemara. Muksa over here means that the chicken's a perfect example of muksa. We're going into Yontif. This is an egg-laying chicken. It's together with a whole bunch of other egg-laying chickens. It's in the coop with the other egg-laying chickens. It's muksa, meaning I had no intent of eating it going into Yontif. Fine. That's a category of muksa. And now we're going to learn our second category within the world of muksa, and that's nolad. What is nolad? Nolad means it comes into the world on Shabbos or on Yontif. This is another category of muksa. It's, right, for our intents and purposes, we're going to call it super muksa. Okay? And again, you get this terminology only here. And there's a reason why, because it's terrible terminology. But you get it over here. It's super muksa. Why super muksa? Meaning it's a higher form of muksa. Because not only did you not have your mind on it before Shabbos or before Yontif, it didn't exist before Shabbos or before Yontif. Now, when I say didn't exist, it doesn't mean that it magically appeared out of nowhere. It just didn't exist in this particular state. So, an egg is a perfect illustration. In fact, if you think about it, what better qualifies as a nolad than an egg which is laid on Yontif? Meaning, that's probably the word we would use to describe it. The egg just came into being on Yontif. Now again, it came into being. It was the same egg inside the chicken as it was outside the chicken. It just simply means that it's in a new state of being. I'll give you another simple example of nolad. An apple falls off the tree on Yontif or on Shabbos. Okay, that's also an example of nolad. Meaning, well, the apple was there before Shabbos and Yontif, yes, but connected to the tree. And now that the apple fell off the tree on Shabbos or on Yontif, so now the apple came into a new state of being on Yontif or on Shabbos. So here, it's mekatsa midas, meaning it's not that just I didn't think about it going into Yontif or into Shabbos. It wasn't even in this state going into Shabbos or Yontif. So now the Gemara telegraphing its punch is basically saying like this. Look. Beit Shammai may not hold of muksa, meaning he may be more lenient in the world of muksa. But this is not a muksa discussion. This is super muksa. This is nolad. And so the Gemara now, in telegraphing its punch, basically says, well, isn't he going to be more strict in the world of nolad? So the Gemara says, "Kasa gadat." I'm just rereading this line. Afilo man deshar be muksa be nolad aser. So my time I de Beit Shammai. So what's the reason behind Beit Shammai? Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, "Okay, but now that you telegraphed the punch, so the counter punch goes like this: La olam betana goes almas lagadol beitzim. It's an egg laying chicken which produced the egg, which means the chicken itself is muksa. Udisle muksa isle nolad. Udisle muksa isle nolad." Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon or Beit Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, you thought that nolad is its own category. Nolad is kind of like a super muksa, and even though if you're going to be lenient by muksa, you'll be more strict by nolad. The Gemara basically says, no, that's not true. That's a false assumption. If you're going to be lenient by muksa, you'll be lenient by nolad. If you'll be strict by muksa, you'll be strict by nolad. So therefore, what the Gemara now is suggesting is, we're just having a basic debate in terms of the far-reaching application of muksa. Meaning Beit Shammai, who allows you to eat the egg on Yontif? Sure. Because he's more lenient regarding muksa. Right? Using the Gemara's terminology, leisle muksa. Again, literally means doesn't hold of muksa, but I'm telling you that's not what it means. It just simply means he's more lenient in the world of muksa. So therefore, and not only is he more lenient by muksa, he's more lenient by nolad as well. And therefore, Beit Shammai allows you to eat the egg. Whereas opposed to Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel is more strict. And Beisel will not allow you to eat the egg because the egg is subject to the prohibition of Muksa, more specifically that of Nolad. Okay, and by the way, let me just point out, I mean, I read it in the Gemara, but just let me say it out. And the Gemara also points out that this represents a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. You will see this time and again. Rabbi Yehuda, holds of Muksa, meaning more strict in his understanding of the world of Muksa, and Rabbi Shimon, leisle Muksa. Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Muksa. Now, mind you, by the way, that historically, right, where the Gemara says, well, Beis Hillel follows like, right, how does the Gemara work? Beis Hillel follows like Rabbi Yehuda, and Beis Shammai follows like Rabbi Shimon. Right, just from a historical standpoint, that's impossible. Meaning Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are in the middle of Bayit Sheni. They're in the middle of the Second Temple. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they're late generation Tanayim. Meaning they came after the destruction of the Second Temple. It just means that they are holding of the same position. That right now we're going to have Beis Shammai, who is Mekel, so line them up like Rabbi Shimon, who does not hold of Muksa. Beis Hillel, who's more Machmir, well, he's going like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he's going to be more Machmir. Okay, so let's now just take a step back, and let's say it now outside so far. So far in the Gemara, what the Gemara now is suggesting is that an egg is laid on Yontif. The chicken that's producing the egg is an egg-laying chicken, which means that the chicken itself is muksa, set aside going, not set aside for yontif, but just the opposite. That would be called mukhan. But set aside, meaning I had no intent of eating this chicken on yontif. Therefore, the egg that comes out of it is an egg that is being produced from a chicken which itself is muksa. And therefore, the egg itself is going to be muksa. If the chicken is muksa, so is the egg going to be muksa. Beis Shammai basically is lenient in the world of muksa, and therefore allows you to eat the egg. Beis Hillel is machmir in the world of muksa, and therefore does not allow you to eat the egg. Okay, this is what the Gemara is proposing up until this point in time. We could ask a really simple question on this entire approach of the Gemara, and that is, why are we talking about the egg? Meaning, if what we're suggesting right now is that this is a muksa issue, so why are we having a conversation of an egg? The egg is just but a derivative of the chicken. So shouldn't the main topic of discussion now be the chicken, not the egg? Right? In other words, bring it back to its basics. If we're having a discussion about what falls under the category of muksa and what doesn't fall under the category of muksa, so the egg is just but a derivative. Talk about the chicken. The chicken, according to Beis Shammai. Right, let's ask a really simple question. Can I eat this chicken on Yontif? Can I shech this chicken on Yontif? The way the Gemara now is setting it up, Beis Shammai would say sure. And Beis Hillel would say no.
Not an egg-laying chicken.
Even an egg-laying chicken. Meaning, because what the Gemara now is doing is saying that this whole debate revolves around the issue of muksa and the application of muksa. To what degree we're going to apply the principle of muksa. If that's true, so don't have the discussion about the egg, have the discussion about the chicken. So stay tuned, because that question, which is such a basic question, is going to come up later in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to basically abandon ship on this whole approach, because that question is really, it's such an obvious issue. Right, correct. Correct. So now the Gemara says, "Umi Amar Rav Nachman Hachi Vatana Beis Shammai Omer Magbiyam El Shulchan Atamos VeKlipin Ubeis Hillel Omer Misalkas Atav LeKula Menara." The Gemara says, "Rav Nachman, what an interesting proposal! But meanwhile, we're going to have a role reversal. Specifically, the Gemara is going to quote now the Mishnah Shabbos. The Mishnah Shabbos says that you're allowed to pick up from the table bones and shells, meaning you finished the meal, delicious." Right, we had chicken for Shabbos, we had nuts for Shabbos, and now what's left on the table? Bones and shells. Bones and shells. Do they have use on Shabbos? No. So while they were connected to the food, so we'll say, okay, fine, I'll have the food connected to the food, so I can pick it up. I can pick up my chicken on Shabbos. I'm happy to report and eat it. But once now the meat is no longer there, and all I'm left is with bones. So what's bones? Bones are muksa. Shells are muksa. So what do I do? So Beis Shammai says, "Magbiyam el shochanat samos veklipin." So that the Beis Shammai is of the position that you could just simply pick it up, pick up the bones, pick up the shells. Beis Hillel omrim misalkas atav kula min na'ara. And Beis Hillel says, "No, you shake the table. Shake the table, meaning don't handle the shells and the bones directly, But indirectly, meaning through the table, you're going to move the bones and the shells off the table. Shake the table, but you're not going to handle it directly. Okay? So far, we would be happy had it not been for Rav Nachman. The Amr Rav Nachman, Anuain Lanu, Ala Beishamak, Rabbi Huda, Beisalak, Rabbi Shimon. And Rav Nachman says, that's not my Masara. That's not my tradition. My tradition is these two positions need to get flipped. Meaning Beit Shammai is going like Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Hillel is going like Rabbi Shimon. Otherwise stated, Beit Shammai is going to be the Machmir. He's the one who says shake the table. And Beit Hillel is going to be the Mekel. He's going to be the one who says that you can handle the bones directly and handle the shells directly. So and that's Rav Nachman's Masorah. And so now we're a little bit stuck. Because when it comes to the issue of Shabbos and Muktzah on Shabbos, so Rav Nachman says, here's how you line it up. Beis Hillel's lenient. He allows you to move the bones and shells. Beis Shammai's machmir. But when it comes to Yontif, Rav Nachman, meaning, look up, 10 lines from where we are in the Gemara. Rav Nachman says that Beis Shammai's lenient and Beis Hillel's machmir. So the Gemara, the question really pivots on Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, why are you flipping from Shabbos to Yontif? Amlecha Rav Nachman, Gabi Shabbos, Sassam Lantanaka Rabbi Shimon, did not. So the Gemara gives an interesting proposal. The Gemara says, well, maybe what we'll do is we'll make a distinction between Shabbos versus Yontif. Meaning, vis-a-vis Shabbos, we have the following Mishnah. Mechad chenes adlun lifnei behema vesa nevei lifnei klavim. So the Mishnah says at the end of Masechet Shabbos that I'm allowed to cut up a gourd. Meaning a gourd, right, a large pumpkin. So I can cut it up for animals to eat. And nevela, I have the carcass of an animal. Now you and I are not going to eat the carcass of an animal on Shabbos. For a really simple reason. It's not kosher. It's nevela. Didn't receive a proper shechita. But it would make for great animal food. So the Mishnah says you can slice it up for your animal on Shabbos. So now, two possible muktzah situations. The Mishnah Shabbos says, no, it's not. It's fine. Cut the gourd. By the way, the gourd has to be detached from the ground. Meaning you can't detach the gourd from the ground. That's a malacha. The gourd was already detached from the ground. But basically, cut the gourd. Cut it up into small pieces. Cut the nevel up into small pieces. That's the Mishnah Shabbos. Mukim la lebeis hilo karebi shimon. So fine. So in other words, that's vis-a-vis Shabbos. We're going to be lenient. Aval, however, top of the next amud, gabi yantav, desas al matana karebi Yehuda. But when it comes to Yontif, so the missionaries are going to be going not like Rabbi Shimon, not like the lenient position, but regarding Yontif, we're going to go strict. Did none. And how do I know that? The Mishnah is going to show us another Mishnah. This is a Mishnah in Beitza. We're going to see this Mishnah in one short month from now. Ein mafkin eitzim in akoros, v'lo min akoros, nish brabi yomtov. So you can't, if you have wood that was set aside as lumber for construction, and then you say on Yontif, you know, a little more firewood. Right? Again, on Yontif, you're allowed to make a fire. You're allowed to, right? Let's just say it simply. We'll learn later on in the Masechta that you can't start the fire in Yontif, but that's a rabbinic prohibition. But basically, you're allowed to make fire in Yontif. So so I have that lumber over there. Let's use that lumber. Well, no, don't use it. That lumber was set aside for construction. That lumber was not set aside for firewood. So therefore, the Mishnah says, "Ein mafkin etzim in akaras v'lo min akaras nishbar b'yantiv." So if it's not set aside for firewood going into Yantiv, you can't use it. So mukim lala beisel kareb Yehuda. So therefore, when it comes to Yantiv, the default position is going to follow like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. So what the Gemara basically now is proposing is we're going to make a distinction between Shabbos and Yantiv. Shabbos, we're going to be lenient. And Yontif, we're going to be strict in the categories of Moksa. To which the Gemara says, why? Why would we do that? That's counterintuitive. Michti. The Gemara here presents the question. Mansas me lemasis and Rabbi. You know there's only one editor of the Mishnayos. Okay? We all knew that. Rabbi Huda Anasi. So in other words, he's the grand editor of all the Mishnayos. That doesn't mean he wrote the Mishnayos, meaning the Mishnayos were always taught to one another. But of course, but there's only one grand editor, and that's Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So, Maishna b'Shabbos is Sassalam k'Rabbi Shimon, and Maishna b'Yomtov is Sassalam k'Rabbi Yehuda. So, odd, meaning the question really now pivots on Rabbi, when it comes to Shabbos, so you're gonna tilt the muktzah dial to basically Rabbi Shimon, where you're going to be more lenient. And then when it comes to Yantiv, the default muksa setting now is going to be set to Rabbi Yehuda, who's more strict. Well, the Gemara says, now I'm really confused. So the Gemara's answer is, well, don't be confused. Amri, they said. Now, whenever you see the word Amri, that means that this was the discussion that recurred in the Beis Medrash again and again. And basically, they came to the following conclusion. Shabbos to Chamir v'lo asu l'zazuli bein, sasam lan ke Rabbi Shimon, demeko. Yom tov dekil v'asu l'zazuli bein, sasam lan ke Rabbi Yehuda, demachmir. So the Gemara says, you know what? No, the default settings are going to shift from Shabbos to Yontav. And on Shabbos, we're going to be more lenient. And on Yontav, we're going to be more machmir in terms of muksa. And the reason why is as follows. We need to be more machmir by Yontav. Why? Because on Yontav, you're allowed to do more things. On Yontav, you can cook. On Yontav, you can transfer fire. On Yontav, you can shecht an animal. There are things you can do on Yontav that you cannot do on Shabbos. If in the world of muksa, we were more lenient in terms of Yontav, so we're going to think to ourselves, well, I could do all these things, and I can quote-unquote do muksa. You know, I'm oversimplifying, I'm overstating it, but it's fine, just for the purpose of understanding. I can cook, and I can do muksa. You know what? Yontav is a free-for-all. So in other words, the default setting for Yontav, we have to be, this is Rebbe's thought process. We're going to be more strict in terms of Yontav regarding muksa, being that there are so many things that we're allowed to do on Yontav. So therefore, we're going to offset it, we're going to counterbalance it by being more strict in terms of muksa. When it comes to Shabbos, well, already the setting for Shabbos is strict, meaning Shabbos, we don't cook, we don't set with fire, these are all malachas. So therefore, we can offset that by being a little bit more lenient regarding muksa. Gemara says, that's Rebbe's thought process. In terms of the default setting for Shabbos is going to be more lenient regarding muksa, more lenient, and the default setting for Yontif is going to be more strict. Good. To which now the Gemara says, B'mayu kimta b'tana goes amad al-gadol beitzim, u'mishum hachi, u'mishum muksa. So the Gemara says, okay, now let's take stock. Let's summary statement for so far today. So you're telling me that our Mishnah is dealing with an egg which was laid by a chicken that was an egg-laying chicken. And again, the chicken itself is muksa. And now the issue is, well, can I or can I not eat the egg? And Beis Shammai says you can, and Beis Hillel says you can't. The Gemara says, so again, and I already foreshadowed this question, but now the Gemara says, okay, but why are we having a discussion about the egg, which is a derivative? So, I hachi ad demiflegi bebeitza liflegu betarnegolus. We're missing the main point, and that is, can I or can I not eat the chicken? Meaning, as much as it is the issue regarding the egg, it's just as much the same issue regarding the chicken. Meaning, this chicken is not muchan. I didn't think we're going to shech this chicken going into Yontif, and so therefore it's muksa. It's categorically muksa. And now, now on Yontif we're a little bit stuck, right? The pantry looks a little bit bare. And now, can I shech this chicken on Yontif? So again, Beit Shammai would say, sure, and Beit Hillel would say, no, you can't. Well, why are we not discussing the chicken? Which seems, it's the primary issue. The egg is just a secondary issue. So the Gemara says, Lodicha kochen de Beit Shammai de benolat share. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it wants to tell you how lenient Beit Shammai is. Not only is Beit Shammai allowing you to eat the chicken, but he's allowing you to eat the egg as well. And for a reason which we mentioned earlier today, I thought the egg would have even been more prohibited because it's nolad, right? What we call it super muksa. So the Gemara says, "V'liflugu b'tanagos lo dicha kochen de beis halal de b'muksa asrei." So the Gemara says, "Well, as much as you can argue that, can't you argue that I would choose and prefer to see the viewpoint of beis halal regarding the chicken, meaning that not only is beis halal not allowing you to eat the egg?" Which you could have said, well, that's no lad. Well, Beis Hillel doesn't even allow you to eat the chicken as well. And the Gemara says, and maybe, look, I have a choice. Either we could show off how lenient Beis Shammai is, where he allows you to eat the egg, or I can show off how strict Beis Hillel is, where he doesn't even allow you to eat the chicken. Now, the Gemara says, now, given the choice, what do you think is better? Meaning, demonstratively, what would be better to teach us? The leniencies or the stringencies? In general, the leniencies are better. Right? This is the Gemara over here, classic line of the Gemara, Koach de Hetera Adif. It's better to demonstrate the leniency than that of being strict. It's a great Rashi right here. Rashi says why? Why is it better to show off leniencies? Because when you take a lenient position, that's from a position of strength. That's from a position of confidence. Meaning, the only way a person's going to be lenient is if he knows that there's reason to be lenient. Meaning, as far as being strict is concerned, anybody can be strict. I can be strict. Meaning, you come to me with a question. I don't know the answer. You know what? Better safe than sorry. I'll say it's prohibited. Not because I know, just simply because I don't know. And anyone can be strict. But if you're going to take a position of leniency, it means that you know full well that leniency is allowable. It's acceptable. So the Gemara says, so maybe you'll tell me that the reason why the Mishnah is talking about eggs is it gets to show off the leniency of Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, okay, but all this is wonderful. V'niflug b'tarvayu. But the Gemara says, yeah, but can't the Mishnah just simply have said, you know what? The chicken and the egg. Beis Shammai says, check on both, meaning you can eat the chicken, you can eat the egg, and Beis Hillel says no to both. Tarnei goes on, that's the God that baits them. He who baits asa, Beis Shammai om tochal, Beis Shammai om lo sochal. Why can't the Mishnah discuss both of them? Right? Why the Mishnah has to only talk about eggs, it can't talk about the chicken itself?